This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome to People Speak. I'm your host, Malik Johnson, and we have a very special guest today, Dr. Helen Caldicott. Dr. Helen Caldicott is a mother of three, Australian-born, physician, lecturer, author, and one, if not the most influential, anti-nuclear activist. Dr. Caldicott, it is indeed a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Caldicott, in 1980, you resigned from Harvard Medical School's Children's Hospital Medical Center to work full-time as an anti-nuclear activist. I was wondering, what prompted this sudden change from medicine to anti-nuclear activism?
Well, I've been heavily involved in anti-nuclear work since I led the movement against the French atmospheric nuclear tests in Australia in 1971-72. That was successful. We forced the French to test underground. I then led the movement with Australian unions against uranium mining. That was successful. They stopped mining uranium for 5 years. I moved to America and took up a job at Harvard Medical School and was on the faculty. My specialty was cystic fibrosis, the most common fatal genetic disease of childhood. I founded an organization called Physicians for Social Responsibility in 1978 and recruited 23,000 doctors to talk to the American people about the medical effects of nuclear power and nuclear war. I had a lot of patients and they were very sick. I visited Russia in 1979 and learned that America wanted to deploy cruise missiles in Europe, which were unverifiable and would end arms control, and Pershing 2 missile hit Moscow in 3 minutes. And I came back to Harvard thinking, what am I doing just treating a few patients here and there when all the world's children were at risk of being vaporized in a nuclear war? And I was impelled then to leave medicine to spend full time trying to stop a nuclear war under Ronald Reagan.
Under Ronald Reagan. Let me ask
under Ronald Reagan.
Okay. Let me ask you this about nuclear energy. What precisely do you see to be the dangers of nuclear energy to humanity and to the environment?
Okay. Nuclear energy is fueled by uranium, which is the raw material in the ground.
Yes.
And it's radioactive. So one-third to one-half of men who've mined uranium have died of lung cancer, number one. Number two, huge piles of waste from uranium mining lies on the ground, particularly in Navajo tribal lands, on Aboriginal tribal lands in Australia, emitting radon gas, which causes the lung cancer. And so people living near these tailings piles are at risk of dying of cancer. Number three, when uranium is put in a nuclear power plant, 100 tons of it, it becomes 1 billion times more radioactive than the original uranium because 200 new elements are formed, none of which existed before uranium was fissioned by man. And some last only seconds and some last millions of years, but they're very, very cancer-causing, carcinogenic. The nuclear power plant only operates for about 30 years, and the way it operates is you immerse this uranium in water, and when it reaches critical mass, tremendous heat is produced, which boils the water, which makes steam, which generates electricity. So a nuclear power plant really is only designed to boil water. It's a very
sophisticated
way to boil water.
Well, it is a sophisticated way to boil water. But, proponents of nuclear energy argue that, fossil fuels are more damaging to the environment and short supply, thereby necessitating that we use nuclear technology, which is, allegedly is cleaner. So it's not just boiling water. It's supposedly a more clean, technology. What do you think about that?
Well, what I think about that is every year 30 tons of very, very dangerous radioactive waste is produced in the nuclear power plants. There are 50,000 tons, let me finish, 50,000 okay. tons of radioactive waste sitting in cooling mm-hmm. pools, which needs to be transferred somewhere. And this waste lasts for 500,000 years. And the materials right. will leak out, as they are now doing, getting into the water, concentrating in the food chain. You can't, radioactive materials are invisible in food. You can't taste them, smell them, or see them. But they lodge in various organs of the body, and they cause cancer. So as a pediatrician and physician, I can assure you that the radioactive waste will, over generations, cause epidemics of childhood cancer, genetic disease, and congenital malformations forevermore. So we're talking about the most enormous emissions and the most enormous dangers that human beings have ever, ever produced. Now, I'm not saying that global warming isn't serious in its own right. However, nuclear power, if just talking about that issue, is not the answer, because nuclear power per se produces a lot of carbon dioxide, which is the main global warming gas, not from the power plant itself, but from mining the uranium, from enriching the uranium, from building the reactor, from transporting and storing the waste for 500,000 years. So at the moment, a nuclear power plant produces 30% or one-third the amount of CO2 as a similar-sized gas-fired electricity-generating plant. But within 10 or 20 years, as uranium declines in availability in the world, a nuclear power plant will produce the same amount of CO2 as a gas-fired plant. So you may as well burn the fossil fuel. At least you're not going to cause epidemics of malignancy in children for the rest of time.
And, so you certainly are saying...
Nuclear power adds to global warming. It's not the answer. It's part of the problem.
What about, you know, many environmentalists argue that hydrogen would be a good alternative to fossil fuel. Would you agree with that?
If you can make it, hydrogen's hard to make. You need electricity going through two electrodes which are immersed in water to generate hydrogen. Now, it is true that people are talking about creating hydrogen from solar power, using solar panels to create
right.
tremendous heat which can be used to generate hydrogen. Wind power can possibly be used to generate hydrogen too. That technology is currently under development, but it is not certainly mature enough yet to talk about that. But there are other ways to generate electricity, wind and solar, which are absolutely here, and people are making huge fortunes out of, you know, selling solar technology and wind technology right across the States and indeed in China and elsewhere.
I see. Well, let me just say this. Listeners, those who listen to Dr. Caldicott, who is our guest, please call in and ask your question of our guest. The telephone number is a toll-free number, 1-877-270-8714. Again, that number is 1-877-270-8714. Dr. Caldicott, I want to try to change. I want to go into another direction with this conversation, and I thought it was important to talk about nuclear energy. Now I'd like to discuss a little bit more about the countries and nuclear energy. What countries rely the greatest on nuclear energy?
Well, the United States, 20% of its electricity is generated from nuclear power.
Yeah.
You could save 28% of the electricity you currently use by turning off your lights and your computers. So it's not and not using drying machines. You can hang your clothes outside in the sun and dry the furnace in the winter. So you don't need nuclear power.
So you're suggesting that we could save, 28% of our electricity
yes.
by just hanging our clothes out?
Exactly.
And
turning off your lights in your gardens and in your house and, you know, There is a sense of entitlement, I think, in the United States that you can use as much energy as you want. You can't, because now things are becoming very serious and your planet is heating up and we've got to, you know, be more judicious in the way we use electricity. So that's number one. Number two, France. In France, they generate 80% of their electricity from nuclear power. The French are kind of crazy. They've got huge quantities of radioactive waste. I know, because I've got a French son-in-law.
Okay.
They've got huge quantities of radioactive waste, and no one knows what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Japan is fairly reliant on nuclear power. They've had some terrible accidents. And I have to tell you mm-hmm. that when the next meltdown occurs, and it's not if
like
but
Chernobyl?
When.
Like Chernobyl?
Like Chernobyl. And that could happen in America tomorrow or tonight. That will mean
that.
The end of nuclear power. You'll have to get rid of it.
Well, let me ask you about, because you mentioned the United States of America, you talked about France, you talk about Japan. What about Australia? You know that in 2005, Australia's Prime Minister, John Howard, proposed that Australia increase its uranium mining and build a nuclear reactor, or a number of them, I guess. And what do you think about his particular proposal at that time? Did you fight against it? What role did you play against Howard? I'm assuming that you
were against his proposal. Well, our Prime Minister has a case of acute nuclear psychosis. He wants to build 25 nuclear power plants in Australia, which is a country bathed in sun and huge amounts of wind. And in fact, we could be the world's leader in solar energy and wind energy and sell it to, you know, millions of people just to our north in Indonesia and in India and the like.
Right.
So the
right.
Prime Minister, let's face it, is in the pocket of the coal industry and the uranium industry. And the truth is Australia is just one big quarry digging up our stuff and sending it overseas, which will cause, you know, millions
right.
of cases of cancer in children in from uranium and add enormously to global warming. So
yeah, you know,
our Prime Minister is a lawyer and doesn't understand science or medicine.
Well, hold it, Dr. Caldicott. I'm an attorney too, believe me.
Well, there are some good attorneys and some bad attorneys.
I'm an attorney. You didn't know that, did you? Well, that's all right. But you know what,
no.
Dr. Caldicott, John Howard, you know, it's interesting that you talk about John Howard. I just can't wait to hear what you have to say about George Bush. But let me just say this here. Audience and listeners, please call in and ask our guest a question. It's a toll-free number. The number is 1-877-270-8714. Again, that number is 1-877-270-8714. Let me just move on. You know, I was reading something in Grist Environmental News and Commentary. In May 2005, Dr. Caldicott, you were interviewed by an individual by the name of Gregory Dickham. And in the interview, you in part discussed a U.S. military general's remark that threatening missile technology was akin, according to the general, to threatening the family's jewels. You further stated that the U.S. general's missiles are an, quote, extension of these generals' sexuality. You said, in fact, you spoke of missile erections and deep penetrations, and that struck me as rather odd. And I was just wondering, you further went on and said that this general should all be just use Viagra. I was curious, would you like to elaborate on this? What were you meaning by psychosexual pathology?
Well, I've written about this extensively in my books. The language that the Pentagon uses is extremely sexual. They do talk about missile erectors, soft laydowns, deep penetrations, hard lines and
they
soft lines.
They do say
lines,
deep penetration.
Yeah.
They use
of missiles.
Wow.
Oh, sure. And they use
wow.
them without any sense
okay.
of embarrassment in front of women and general audiences.
Wow.
Sort of, you know how sports language is sexual, the male sports language of football and the like? Well, the
right.
Pentagon's language is even more sexualized. And
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I find it
you
very
know,
fascinating.
Well, I find that interesting that you brought that up. You consider it psychosexual pathology. Do you think this is the issue
is.
Just of men?
Yes.
Do you think
yes.
it's the issue
I
of men?
Test-
I mean, what about... Oh, go ahead.
It's testosterone toxicity.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, you're beating on men. Let me ask you about Prime Minister
I'm
Margaret
not beating
Thatcher.
On you. I'm talking generically. Men always take this personally. This is nothing
no,
to do
No, I'm not
you.
Taking it personally. Well, what about Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher? What about Golda
oh,
Meir?
Well, I jokingly say she had an arenoblastoma on her ovary, which decreased testosterone.
Right.
I'm
come on.
You're picking out one woman amongst, you know, three...
Million.
billion women.
Oh, I agree.
That's not
fair. I agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Condoleezza Rice or the Golda Meir and the Margaret Thatchers, they don't represent women, certainly not. So I agree. And actually, you know, when you talk about psychosexual pathology, I think you're absolutely correct, and I wanted to talk about that, really, because that's really important, because I do see that there's some psychosexual pathology among with many of the men. Well, I actually want to say this to you, because I want to talk a little bit more about the countries, and I want to get into some of these countries in particular. You talked about France already. You talked about the United States. You know, there are countries who, of course, acquired mass amounts of nuclear weapons. You know, confirmed countries with nuclear weapons include the United States, Russia, United Kingdom, you got France and China, India and Pakistan and North Korea. Now, do you believe,
and
Dr.
Israel.
Caldicott?
Israel.
That's exactly what I was about to ask you. Do you believe, Dr. Caldicott, that Israel has nuclear weapons? And you've already answered
it. I don't believe.
Now, my question is, you know.
I know. Israel has,
you know.
Israel has the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. She's got 200
in the world?
To 400 hydrogen bombs.
Whoa.
And that's confirmed.
That's confirmed?
Yeah.
Well, why is Israel not part of the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons treaty?
A very, very good question. She's a rogue state who has not signed the non-proliferation treaty, has done all of this in secret, and she should be disciplined by the whole world. Pakistan and India, too, are rogue states. They haven't signed the non-proliferation treaty. But in my mind, the real rogue states in the world are Russia and America. Of the 30,000 nuclear weapons in the world today, Russia and America own 97% of them. They still have thousands of hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert on missiles, ready to launch with a 3-minute decision time by Putin or Bush. We got within 10 seconds of a nuclear war when Yeltsin made a mistake in 95.
Yes.
He nearly blew
yes.
up the world. And so we're yes. lucky still to be here, and no one's attending to this most extreme danger, much, much worse than global warming.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I offered to do the interview, because this is a very important topic. Let me just say this, audience and listeners, of course, if you want to come in and ask a question to Dr. Caldicott, the telephone number is 1-877-270-8714. Again, that number is 1-877-270-8714. You mentioned Israel, Dr. Caldicott, or actually you mentioned it before I did. Does Israel's having nuclear weapons not provoke neighboring countries in the Middle East to also develop nuclear technology?
It's extraordinarily provocative. And, you know, the Israelis are very smart. I don't understand their thinking at all, their psychology. I mean, you know, they build a huge arsenal of nuclear weapons and say to all the surrounding countries, you're not allowed to have any. Well, that's rubbish. I mean, people don't take that. Why shouldn't other countries have nuclear weapons if Israel does? So it's extremely provocative, but more than that, ultimately dangerous, because a nuclear war in the Middle East or between India and Pakistan could trigger a nuclear war between Russia and America. They, in toto, have about 8,000 hydrogen bombs ready to go. There are enough weapons on Earth to overkill every person 12 times. That means you die and you stand up again, you die and you stand up again.
Stand up again, die again. Well, Dr. Caldicott, you know, the United States of America is very concerned about the weapons of mass destruction, the stockpiles of banned weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein allegedly had. And the United States of America is very much concerned about the nuclear technology and that the Ahmadinejad in Iran is producing. Just out of curiosity, back to Israel. The United States of America is concerned about North Korea and its nuclear technology. Why is the United States, in your opinion, not concerned about Israel's nuclear technology?
Look, that's a very good question, and I can't answer that, except that the Jewish lobby is very powerful in America. I wrote about this in one of my books, I think Missile Envy, which I wrote in 84, that some Israelis are in the Pentagon consistently, and they know about the new weapons that are being designed even before America's had a chance to produce them, and they've produced them themselves. It's a very serious situation which needs to be examined, and two people just wrote a wonderful article in, I think, the London Review of Books about the Israeli lobby in America. I can't remember their names at the moment, but it got a lot of negative publicity. But the truth is what they were saying.
We have a caller online.
Spot on. And this needs to be examined. There's tremendous hypocrisy in the nuclear situation in the world. But the most hypocritical nation is America. America's got more nuclear weapons than anyone in the world. And they've got, you know, and they're building more as we speak.
Okay, well, you know what? I wanted to talk to you about the United States and America. But before we do that, I'd like to go ahead and take a call, Dr. Caldicott, if that's okay with you. There is an individual who's all ready to talk. Could you please give us your first name, caller, location, and please ask Dr. Caldicott, our guest, a question. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I am also a doctor. I am Dr. Williams. I know that there are different levels of waste. Low-level waste is high as high-level waste. And I would like to ask Dr. Caldicott, what are some of her resolutions that she could come up with since she has all of this radioactive information that needs to be shared with the world?
Thank you for that question. First, I would refer you to my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, published 6 months ago by the New Press. The answers to your questions are all enumerated in that book. First, the solutions to radioactive waste are, number one, don't produce any more. That means closing down all the nuclear power plants in the world. Number two, there are hundreds and thousands of tons of radioactive waste collectively in Russia, France, Britain, Europe, Japan, America, Canada, and absolutely no one knows what to do with it because it lasts for so long, half a million years, that we scientifically will never achieve a solution to isolating that waste from the ecosphere for that length of time because the scientists developed a hypothesis which they either prove or disprove within their lifetime, and we'll all be dead soon. So we're leaving the most potently carcinogenic, toxic legacy to our descendants simply so that we can turn on our lights. So in medicine, if you have a disease that's incurable, the only recourse is prevention. So number one, we must stop making this waste immediately. Number two, I think that we should transfer the brilliant brains that work in Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore labs designing, developing, testing and building new nuclear weapons as we speak. Stop them making bombs and divert their brilliant brains into working out what to do with the radioactive waste that they are responsible for having created all these years.
I have a question for the doctor.
Okay, go ahead. State your name.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm here in the United States in California. I was wondering if Dr. Caldicott had heard of anything called the Samson option in Israel, whereby if their country is attacked and there's no hope of victory, they detonate a huge arsenal of nuclear weapons or WMDs that destroys their country and their enemies?
I have read about that, but only vaguely and truthfully. But I do know that that people in Israel have said that if they are threatened, they'll take the world with them. That's a kind of nihilistic approach, but I know that some people in Israel believe that, and I think partly it stems from their experience with the Holocaust themselves. But it's extremely dangerous and suicidal and fratricidal, if you will. Israel certainly needs to be brought into line, to be disciplined, to sign the NPT, to admit what weapons they have, and to act. But I do believe, too, that no country will stop making weapons and proliferation of weapons will not cease until America decides with Russia to sign a treaty to abolish all their nuclear weapons, 97%, well, I've got 28,000 together. Only then will the rest of the world be brought into line because people in glass houses can't throw stones. America can't say at the United Nations that Ahmadinejad, for instance, in Iran, can't make nuclear weapons. Not that I think he is doing so. But, you know, people just laugh at America when she says that. So, therefore, America has to rise to its full moral and spiritual height and lead the world towards sanity and survival in this very dangerous nuclear age that we're in currently.
Dr. Caldicott, you brought up the issue of Iran. Do you think that the United States of America or Israel will attack Iran's nuclear facilities? And if so, with what result?
I think there's a high probability of that. They've been planning an attack on Iran's facilities where they're enriching uranium only for the last 2 years. There are bombers in Guam. There are two aircraft carriers in the Gulf now, and I think another one heading there. Cheney has said, Vice President Cheney, that if America doesn't bomb Iran, Israel will. There is definitely talk of using nuclear weapons, deep penetrating nuclear weapons, on the Iranian facilities. And a study has been done by Physicians for Social Responsibility to show that if those three nuclear facilities at Natanz, Isfahan, and somewhere else were bombed with nuclear weapons, two each, I think, the resultant fallout could kill up to 2.8 million people right over to Pakistan as a cloud of radiation falls down on those people. They'll die of acute radiation illness, vomiting and bleeding to death, and later on of many millions of cancers and leukemias and genetic abnormalities.
And this is just from the result of bombing the nuclear facilities in Iran, right?
Yes, but if they but it is the result of using deeply penetrating nuclear weapons on those facilities. Now, if only conventional weapons were used, there would still be a huge amount of death and destruction because uranium itself is a carcinogen, and America's using uranium bombs in Iraq as we speak. In 1991, they used 360 tons of uranium weapons. Uranium is very reactive, so when it burns, it burns when it hits a tank, producing tiny, tiny particles that are inhaled into the terminal air passages of the lung. The incidence of childhood cancer, and I say childhood because children are very sensitive to radiation. They get cancer much more readily than adults. The incidence of childhood cancer in Basra since 91 has gone at 700% or seven times. And the incidence of severe congenital anomalies, babies born with no brains, with single eyes, with no arms or legs, has gone up 700% or seven times. Now, the half-life of uranium-238, which is the material they're using in Iraq, is 4.5 billion years. So America's A, conducting a nuclear war there, B, the results will be ongoing forevermore. See, they're absolutely polluting the cradle of civilization where arithmetic began and law began and the whole thing. And D, it's almost impossible to get the American media to attend to this disgraceful, immoral, illegal situation. I wrote an article for the New York Times, which they refused to publish, about this about 5 years ago.
Wow.
So the uranium they scatter by bombing the uranium facilities in Iran, if they do so, will have similar results as the uranium is vaporized and scatters as fallout over many, many nations according to the prevailing wind direction.
So this would be catastrophic if the United States or Israel or anyone else bombed the nuclear facilities in Iran, correct?
Catastrophic, medically speaking.
Yeah.
Catastrophic.
Yeah. Well, let me just say we have our esteemed doctor, Dr. Caldicott, on People Speak. You can call in, audience. The telephone number is 1-877-270-8714. Again, that number is 1-877-270-8714. Dr. Caldicott, I understand, I know that you've written many books and several books on the subject of nuclear technology and weapons, and your latest book is Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming or anything else. I was just curious, where can we purchase your book?
Oh, easy. It's in Barnes & Noble's at the moment. You can get it from Amazon. It's in the bookshops. It's readily available, number one. Number two, the other book I wrote just before the Iraqi invasion in 2002 was called Nuclear the new nuclear danger, George Bush's military-industrial complex, and I write about what weapons they're using in Iraq and Afghanistan, near-nuclear weapons, I mean hideous things. I write about the new nuclear weapons America's building. I write about George Bush and his military-industrial complex, the fact that 32 people in his administration came from Lockheed Martin and Boeing, etc. So it's a military administration. I write about Halliburton and Cheney. It's quite an extensive book. And you can get that from Amazon too, and it should be available in the bookshops. It's
okay,
it was published by the New Press.
Oh, was?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. Could you give us the title of that book again, Dr. Caldegut?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex.
Industrial Complex. Just out of curiosity, does that book go into details as far as the relation between George Bush and Iraq? Basically taking and extracting the resources from Iraq, and what are some of the reasons that we may have gone into Iraq?
We also have a caller, by the way.
And it talks in length about the neocons, about Paul Wolfowitz, who should never have been assigned to the World Bank. He's a crook. He was the architect of the Iraqi invasion. It talks about
Paul
Cheney and Richard Pearl. And all of the neocons, it talks about them and their relationship with Condi Rice and what they do in the administration. It talks about, you know, America really went into Iraq to take the oil, to steal the oil, and they're doing that now. There's a puppet government in Iraq run by the United States. America's building the biggest embassy in the world, in Baghdad, in the world. It is building 14 large military bases, so it's not going to leave. It's there for good, and it's there to steal the oil, let's be frank.
Has no intentions of leaving. Wow. There's a caller. Caller, please give us your first name, your location, and question for our guest, Dr. Caldegut.
Yes, so this is the Reverend Jesse Jackson from Los Angeles.
Well, did you have a question? Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess, Jesse, you still there? Do you have a question for Dr. Caldegut?
Yes, I do, Dr. Caldegut. I am the Reverend Jesse Jackson from Los Angeles.
Are you there? Well, I guess we lost that caller. Dr. Caldegut, you're still there?
I apologize for that. We did remove the caller off the air.
Okay. Well, thanks. Very good. Well, you know, you've written so many books, and you also have a website, Dr. Caldegut, and I was wondering if you can give the audience your website as well?
Yes, I've got an institute in Washington called the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, and we hold symposia on various issues, including the weaponization of space, the medical consequences of depleted uranium weapons, the hair trigger alert situation, and the like. And the website is nuclearpolicy.org.
Nuclearpolicy.org.
Yes.
Nuclearpolicy.org.
You'll find a lot of information there.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Caldegut. And I was just curious, Dr. Caldegut, aside, you know, we can read the books and you know, nuclear power is not the answer, and also the book that you were talking about as far as the industrial complex, George Bush's military-industrial complex, we could also join organizations such as yours, which is the Nuclear Policy Research Institute. What else can we do to further the cause of basically, you know, anti-nuclear proliferation?
Well, in other words, to ensure our survival. Yes, look, I think the most important thing you could do at this point is to read both of those books, because as President Jefferson once wisely said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. So I think the first thing is education. And as you read those books, many ideas will occur to you. Many of you belong to churches. Many of you belong to organizations. Many of you are professionals like engineers and teachers and nurses and doctors. And you all belong
and
to
lawyers.
Organizations.
Yeah.
And lawyers. Lawyers. yes. So,
yeah.
And all those professions have annual meetings where thousands of people attend. You know, you could ask me to come and be a guest speaker so that I can educate even more people. You must read the New York Times every day so that you know what's going on. You must participate in the democracy by going to see your elected representatives, both state and federal, and educating them about these issues about which they know not a lot. Make them read my two books, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming and The New Nuclear Danger. Educate them, pressure them, lobby them, make sure they represent you and your children and grandchildren and not the corporations that presently pay for their elections. Get onto the talkback shows and participate to educate your fellow Americans. There are many, many ways to go. Start your own organization. Join ones that are currently up and running, although I think we need an injection of a lot of energy, enthusiasm and excitement and inspiration. So maybe that's going to be your role. America needs a revolution. You need to take your country back from the military-industrial complex, which are currently causing you to spend nearly $700 million a year on weapons that no one needs. And that money's being stolen from you when you should be having a free healthcare system and your educational system should be free, paid for by your tax dollars. So you've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do. Hey, Dr. Caldicott, how about I take your book? Because I'm going to get the other one, the industrial complex, but George Bush's military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
I take both of them and give a copy to George Bush. Do you think he'll be able to read it?
Look, I think he is severely dyslexic, but he obviously can read. I think he's learned to read his teleprompter quite well in recent years. He is a strangely incurious man. He virtually doesn't read, let's be frank. He also doesn't read the newspapers, he said, nor watch television. He depends on what his advisors tell him. I don't think it would be worthwhile to give him my books. On the other hand, I did go and visit with Ronald Reagan for an hour and a quarter in 1983, and I spent more time with him than anyone during his two terms of presidency alone with his daughter. We talked for an hour and a quarter. He knew nothing about nuclear weapons or their technology or the treaties signed by America, and I had just written Missile Envy, so I kind of taught him. He got quite anxious. I had to hold his hand for at least half the time. He was a nice old man, nice. He had a heart.
You said you thought that Reagan had a heart and that you could reach him, unlike George Bush. George Bush's frozen. He has a frozen heart.
Yes, I think he does. I'm very sad to say that. There's a very good book written by a man called Frank, who's a psychiatrist, called Bush on the Couch. And he had a lot of trauma as a child. And he is dyslexic. And he's totally an inappropriate person, absolutely, to be, A, the President of the United States, B, to be the Commander-in-Chief, because he is the one who decides whether or not to press the button. And he has 3 minutes decision time because the missiles only take 30 minutes to go from launch to land from Russia and vice versa. And I think that that's an inappropriate situation, have a man like that in charge of the fate of the Earth, literally and metaphorically. And I think it's time that we examined not just what the candidates who are running for Congress and for the presidency say, but to look at their psyches, because, you know, let's face it, the bombs were built by deranged people, I consider. And they were run by this sort of reptilian midbrain. And I think it's important for us to look at the etiology of the pathology manifesting in the world today, all this killing and wars and stuff. And the etiology is the reptilian midbrain of some men's minds. Not all men, but some. And I think to not look at the cause of the problem is defeatist, because if we can't work out the reason that a person has a disease or the etiology, then we can't cure them. And when we worked out why people got poliomyelitis and we isolated the virus, we could prevent it happening. Therefore, we have to isolate the virus infecting the human race, which is the need to fight and kill. And I think that my next book I want to write is going to be called Why Men Kill, and look at what is it about, what defect is it in the human race that causes us to...
I have a question for Dr. Caldicott.
Destruction. Pardon?
Okay, we have another caller. Go ahead. Please state your name, your location, your question.
Thank you. Mike from California. Dr. Caldicott, it's a pleasure listening to you speak. Are things any better than they were in the 1950s when kids were taught to hide under a desk and for fear of nuclear fallout? You know, I understand that Russia still maintains or the United States still maintains a first strike policy. And considering that there are, hundreds or thousands of nukes from Russia pointed at the United States, that's a disaster just waiting to happen, it seems like.
Yes, Mike, it's more dangerous, far more dangerous by orders of magnitude than it was when you hid under your desk in duck and cover exercises in the 50s. Russia's got 2,500 H-bombs ready to launch at you. They take half an hour to hit you. There are 40 of them targeted on New York as we speak, probably 60 on Washington. Every town with a population more than 50,000 is targeted with at least one bomb. You've got 5,500 on head trigger alert. And America does have a policy to fight and win a preemptive secret nuclear war against Russia, and it makes the Russians very paranoid and very jumpy. So we could have a nuclear war just by accident, by terrorists infiltrating the command centers, or by someone hacking into the control system of the American nuclear weapons. We are in a very, very tenuous position, much, much more dangerous than when you were a child, Mike. And I refer to this and talk about it at length in the book, The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex.
Well, Dr. Caldicott, I was curious, why are we learning, they used to tell us that we need to go under the desk if there's a nuclear attack. What is the government telling us now as far as a nuclear attack? Because when I look at the Bush administration, I get no guidance. I get no instruction. I get nothing as to what should I do as a citizen in the United States of America if there's a nuclear attack or if there's a nuclear accident. It could be a spill of some sort. Why do you think that is?
Okay,
that the government doesn't
during
guide
the 80s, during the 80s, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the famous FEMA, which screwed up things in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina, was in charge of, what you do. And what you did in the 80s was that on day one, all the odd-numbered number plates cars leave and go to little places in the country. And there's to be no panic, and you have to take your checkbooks, your credit cards, but leave food for the cat and dog. The next day, the even-numbered number plates cars leave. Well, the fact that nuclear war takes an hour to complete bilaterally was beside the point. Now, and FEMA also said, if you've got enough shovels, we'll be all right. So you dig yourself a hole and get in the hole and put two doors on top of it and 3 feet of dirt, and you'll be protected from nuclear fallout. So it's ridiculous. There's nothing you can do to save yourselves. The second, but you need to know that after 9/11, apparently, Dick Cheney built a huge underground fallout shelter at his vice presidential residence in Washington. Now, in terms of a nuclear meltdown, Nuclear Regulatory Commission says you have to evacuate people within 10 miles radius of the reactor. I've talked about a wonderful study done by Union of Concerned Scientists about a meltdown at Indian Point, 35 miles from Manhattan. If the wind's blowing in the right direction, if that happened, 800,000 people could die, and Manhattan would be uninhabitable forevermore. So let's face it, there's really nothing you can do if there's a meltdown except go inside, close all the windows, and try not to breathe.
So there's pretty
much nothing
we can do. But the
fallout will remain around. What?
So there's pretty much nothing we can do.
No, except close down the reactors and get rid of the bombs. You've got to be proactive, not retroactive in a nuclear sense.
And not reactive, yes. Well, that makes that, it drives the point all the way more home, doesn't it? Because if there's nothing we can do, we have to do something now.
Exactly. You've got it. It's preventive medicine. You have to get active. You can't sit back and think to yourself you want to be psychologically comfortable. For to be psychologically comfortable in today's world with such enormous dangers facing us all is to be passively suicidal. And, you know, when we have suicidal patients in our consulting rooms, we hospitalize them because they are in need of urgent help. And society as a whole at the moment is practicing passive suicide. And I know that the American people care deeply about their lives and their future, and I know that they can be activated to save themselves and the world.
And that's exactly what we have to do, and we may need to start first with this particular show here, because you have books, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, or anything else, 2006, and you also have a book that deals with the industrial complex, the new nuclear danger, George Bush's military-industrial complex. If anybody wants to call in, the number is 877-270-8714. Dr. Caldicott, you said there your next book could be Why Men Kill. How is that going to tie in with your anti-nuclear activism?
Well, the ultimate form of war is nuclear war, isn't it? And the men who run the Pentagon still see nuclear weapons as available and useful weapons, whereas what they'll do is destroy maybe the only life in the universe. So we've got to stop killing. We've got to stop thinking that we can go and kill people because we don't like them or we want their oil or we're vengeful. We've got to grow up, in other words, psychologically. So what I want to do is examine this issue and this question from various perspectives, from a socio-biological perspective. Now, when we lived in caves, it was appropriate for men who were strong and had big muscles to kill the saber-toothed tigers and the mammoth elephants to save us as we were breastfeeding our babies in the cave. Why do women fall in love with alpha males? I used to when I was premenopausal. I couldn't help it. What is that instinct? Do we want to have male babies who will protect us? Do we want strong partners who will protect us because we still think we live in caves? I want to look at it from a Jungian archetypal perspective. What are the subliminal archetypes in society? Why do we glorify war? Why, when you go to Europe, is there a killer on a horse in every square? Why does France have a huge monument to Napoleon, who is a psychopath, killed hundreds of thousands of people in the name of France? Why do we glorify killers? What is that about? Why do women let the men do this? Why is war always fought in the name of God? It doesn't matter which God it is, it's always in the name of God, whereas, you know, some of the greatest art and literature has been produced in the name of God. What is religion about when it comes to war? Why do we behave really as huge tribes, hating other tribes? Look at what happened with the ex-Soviet Union and how Americans hated the communists so much they were prepared to blow up the world, better dead than red. Why now is this huge movement against the Muslim nations? Why do the Muslims also, some of the more way out ones, you know, have jihads and praise God all the time, think if they die they'll get how many, 80 virgins in the sky? I mean, it's such primitive, regressive thinking. I want to examine all of this and see if I can. I don't think it'll do any good, mind you, but I think this book needs to be written.
Well, Dr. Caldicott, do you think that we're devolving as human species or not evolving at all?
If you read St. Augustine's Confessions and you go right back in literature, I see no evidence of evolution, psychologically speaking.
I see.
On the other hand, I don't think we're capable of that. I mean, there are some wonderful people and really, truly noble people, and we need to emulate them and teach this stuff in schools, you know, how to evolve psychologically in order to save our lives.
Oh, wow. We have one last call, Dr. Caldicott, and hopefully this individual, I believe I know her, but anyway, state your name, location, and question for our esteemed guest, Dr. Caldicott.
Hello, Dr. Caldicott. This is Basma Farhat. One of the hosts of the People Speak Radio. Thank you for joining us this evening. Congratulations, Lee. You're doing a fantastic job. Dr. Caldicott, having read your book, The New Nuclear Danger, George W. Bush and the Military-Industrial Complex, and listening to you just now speaking about the patriarchal aspects of militarism and nuclear power on Earth, it reminds me of a book by Juliana Casey, Where Is God Now? Nuclear Terror, Feminism, and the Search for God. In this mentality, do we really, I mean, isn't our first generation, especially considering here in the United States of America, we are facing the imminent presidency of our first female president. That first generation of feminists actually scares me, I'll be quite honest with you. And I'll tell you, because they have fought the ranks on a level of masculinism that they've had to fight, and I understand that. But I don't think we're quite ready yet to take it to the next level and create a peaceful society. Do you agree that not only is this going to be a difficult process still for quite some time, but how do you feel about the low-grade nuclear deaths that we are incurring as an American society on our own soldiers by the weapons that we are providing as a community, as a society here? Providing them with weapons that are not only killing the enemy, but killing the killers.
Yes. Well, you know, uranium. Most of your soldiers are being exposed to that uranium in Iraq, and
exactly. It's
secreted in the semen. And they're finding that their babies are being born, some of them deformed, and almost certainly you'll be seeing a higher than normal incidence of cancer in your own soldiers. So I care deeply about that, but I also care deeply about the millions of Iraqi innocent people, children and women, who are being exposed as well to this so-called nuclear war. I think it's just almost beyond comprehension. In terms of the feminists, yes, I remember Gloria Steinem was the one who pushed for women to join the military way back, and I was absolutely incensed and shocked by that attitude. And, you know, now they're getting raped, these poor women in the military, in large numbers, and being abused because what they do to train men to become killers is to remove their female instincts and make them, and they brutalize them. You saw that in Heavy Metal Jacket, I think, that film. I think that, and I think Hillary Clinton's joined the male ethos too, to a large degree, and what we need to do is discard this male ethos and work together in partnership with the men, the women, maintaining our estrogen-like characteristics. And the men need to be disciplined, and they need to get in touch with their feelings, and they need to, well, I know, because I have a lot of men who've been my patients who, on their deathbeds, recant and talk about all the awful things they've done in their life. I think America is a very misogynist society, still totally dominated by the male ethos. Just watch sport in the weekends, you know. The racing car drivers, all of this, I want to write about it. It makes me actually feel quite nauseated because the natural extension of that rampant masculinity, which is celebrated, how they sell cars, it's the whole thing, will most probably lead, if we don't curb it and do something about this behavior and these instincts, will lead to the death of, as Carl Sagan said, the only life in the universe, which is our planet. And I think women have a huge role to play. 53% of us are women, and we're such wimps. We just sit back and allow this to happen, and at time we stepped into our full moral and spiritual powers. And you know, 53% of all parliaments, legislatures, corporations, universities should be women. And the magic number is 30%, below which the women tend to vote to please the men. And above 30% representation is such mutual reinforcement and support. They say, no, we're not voting for missiles today. We're voting for milk for children.
Perfectly amazing. I will let you go. Thank you so much for being with us and for answering my question. And one other thing, Dennis Halliday asked me to extend his best to you and good wishes to you.
give him my deepest regards, please. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
Absolutely. Thank you. Carry on, Lee.
Well, thank you, caller. You know, Dr. Caldicott, in 1982, you founded the Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament. Is that organization still around?
It certainly is. It's a very powerful force in Washington. They support women getting into Congress and into the Senate, and many women who now presently are in the Congress belong to WIL, which is an offshoot of WAND, Women's Action for New Directions, and they're being supported by WAND and being taught about the nuclear issue, excuse me. They did change the name from Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament to Women's Action for New Directions when the Cold War ended, and that was unfortunate, actually, because we need the anti-nuclear work now more than ever, and we need women to really be leading the charge. And I'm using a military analogy as I speak, and I apologize for that. But women have just a key role to play now in the world, and that organization is very, still very potent.
Excellent. I think that we have another caller. Caller, are you there? Well, I guess not. I probably got disconnected. Anyway, give us a call, people, and call in. People speak. And speak to our guest, Dr. Caldicott. Telephone number is 1-877-270-8714. Again, that number is 877-270-8714. This is Dr. Caldicott, who's a renowned activist as far as anti-nuclear proliferation. Dr. Caldicott, do you see that anywhere that the United States of America is guilty of violating the nuclear proliferation treaty, the treaty of the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons, I should say?
Oh,
do you see where
The United States is actively violating the non-proliferation treaty because in Article 6 of the NPT, the signers, which were the main nuclear powers, France, China, Britain, America and Russia, said that they would move rapidly towards disarmament, and they've done exactly the opposite, but particularly the United States, who currently is building a whole new nuclear arsenal, for God's sake. And the labs are right into that, and I describe that in my book, The New Nuclear Danger. It's terribly, terribly serious, and so America is actively flouting and violating the NPT. So the example to the world is, you know, don't do what we say, do what we do, and that's the example.
And not only that, it seems as though the United States is saying that, don't do as we do either, because we're telling Iran and other places, don't you do or create nuclear weapons. Yeah, yeah. Well, Dr. Caldicott, you have been...
Absolute hypocrisy, and the world sees the hypocrisy.
And that's why all the more that it's important for Americans, everyone, especially particularly Americans, to get involved and start joining organizations such as yours, reading the book like your organization, Nuclear Policy Research Institute, and reading your book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. We need to read The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military Industrial Complex, and get a little bit more involved and educate our politicians. I certainly thank you, Dr. Caldicott, for joining. I really do. I really appreciate that you came here and you educated me. I was sitting here taking notes, and I'm going to do a lot more research myself. Thank you, Dr. Caldicott, for appearing on People Speak.
Thank you.
I certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, very much.
Thank you. Our next week's it's going to be Willie Nelson. So next week, please come here to People Speak. Willie Nelson shall be here, and we shall engage him in a lively discussion. Thank you very much for coming, everyone, and this is Malik Johnson. I'm signing off. People Speak. Thank you very much.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the table, by the relief fountain, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering how if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is mine, land from California to the New York Island, redwood forest, to the Gulf Stream wonderland. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.